Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till three, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till three.
An Odyssey station.
Boy, we are way over. But
right on time, baby.
We are talking Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer fact of this segment. He turned down the role of Ponyboy in The Outsiders in 1983.
Really?
Yeah, he would have been he was going to be cast by as Ponyboy, played by C. Thomas Howell. Hmm. So he would have been alongside Matt Dillon, Rob Lowe, Patrick Swayze, Ralph Macchio. That's a pretty good cast. But do you know what he opted against that role for? He was in a Broadway edition of Slab Boys with Sean Penn and Kevin Bacon.
Good God.
So early 80s on Broadway, there was a Slab Boys had Val Kilmer, Sean Penn, Kevin Bacon in it.
Goodness gracious.
Pretty good, huh? Pretty good.
And those two guys blew up immediately after that.
Apparently he also turned down Patrick Swayze's role in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. That was going to be a fact later in the show, Jeff.
Yeah. All right. I could see him in that role.
He said, no way. He said, there's no, he goes, I don't see it. He was not as accomplished. He went to Juilliard, was not accomplished as a dancer. Swayze was the perfect guy for that. And he didn't want to get cast as a hunk in movies. Or like the beefcake guy, because it was on the heels of Top Gun, and he was like, "I don't want to get cast type." So instead of that role, Willow,
complete opposite. Matt Mardigan.
He took Willow instead of Swayze's role in Dirty Dancing, Johnny Castle.
Yeah, I mean, as far as renown, probably not a great move, but. Willow's got a good spot in history.
It's got great. It's very creepy.
Yeah, oh God, yes.
Very good old Mad Mardigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Have you been tracking what's going on with the A's in Sacramento? You said yes. The technology side of things, that has been a disaster
of epic proportions. The broadcast was so. For those that are not caught up on the A's, they are not the Oakland A's, nor are they the Sacramento A's. They're just the A's playing in Sacramento at a minor league baseball ballpark. Well, what happens when you move into these buildings, the infrastructure is built for minor league baseball. It is not built for massive TV and radio networks to come in and take a signal that's probably a 5G hotspot.
Yeah. So that's been a mess. Their broadcast, they've played two games in Sacramento so far against the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And both games have seen their broadcast glitch, drop out.
And not just the A's. It's not like, oh, the A's are cheap, their broadcast sucks. No, the Cubs broadcast dropped out because they don't have the actual bandwidth to run one, let alone two major league broadcasts.
So in Sacramento, the Rivercat Stadium is not it's not like a rundown dump. No, it's a very nice stadium.
Yeah.
But it's not to MLB standards, right? Their media room is a tent.
Yeah.
That is way too small for Major League Baseball. So that's a mess. But the biggest issue in, I just think of if the A's were here in Portland for this stretch, like a 3-year run, like they're going to be in Sacramento for 2-year run, what would the reception be? And it would be, I think it would be overwhelming.
Yes.
It would be insanely difficult because it'd have to be in a very small stadium like this one. They're playing in a stadium that has a capacity of 14,014.
What's the retrofit in Hillsboro supposed to be?
I'm not sure. I think it's supposed to be around 10 if you want to max it out. But I don't quote me on that. I don't know the new stadium and what it's going to be. But 14,014 fans is what it can hold in Sacramento. There is a group that is pushing to get Major League Baseball to Sacramento, and if the first 2 days of the A's being in that stadium are any indication, it is not a big league stadium.
No.
They have not sold out either one of the games. The announced attendance, which we know, announced attendance versus paid it or actual in butts in seats, mm-hmm. they are completely different.
Yes.
Because they'll say, ah, tickets sold. Sure, you know, see the Blazers sellout streak, mm-hmm. right? See a game where you're like, there's no way this many people are here. Game one, they only had 12,000 fans in the stadium.
And so I've got a buddy who has season tickets to the Sacramento A's. And apparently as part of buying those tickets, because there's such a limited supply, you have to commit to appearing at something like half of 40 of the home games. And if you're already not having people show up, boy.
It has not been the greatest weather, but I don't think that would matter. If they were going to have baseball, people would be there.
Yeah, and I just checked the new Hillsborough Stadium is actually half of what we were thinking, or at least what I was thinking.
It's five?
It's seven.
It's seven?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Whatever.
But to your point, like, it's just this difference in how you have to execute it.
But 12,000 on opening night against the Chicago Cubs. So just think of how many Cubs fans were there as opposed to A's fans.
And still.
They're not getting... Last night's game, 10,000 announced.
No.
They
already
dropping down. 10,000. So they lost 2,000 fans from opening night to night two. Again, weather not great. I don't think that would matter. Surely it wouldn't matter here. I think the reaction in Portland would be completely different. And there's one thing that you cannot deny about Portland. You can call this not a great sports town all you want.
They show up for the teams.
People show up, whether it is the Blazers, whether it is the Timbers, the Thorns. Mm-hmm. The Portland Winterhawks are in the...
Hell, the Pickles.
Yes, they are in the playoffs right now, picking up a win last night. There is passion for the sports that are here.
When I was driving home from the game, from the TV show last night, you know what I passed on my way home? Mm. A fleet of trucks flying Winterhawks flags.
Sweet. Badass, brother.
I was like, huh.
But there's the A's are not selling tickets in a micro stadium, and that is alarming. I was also looking, I was tracking like the opening night and how the reception was, because mm-hmm. I was like, this is going to be pretty cool for Sacramento, right? Apparently, a slew of fans just left in the sixth inning. Mm-hmm. There were competing chants within the stadium of Oakland and Sacramento, and all of them just kept dying down and fizzling out. There's zero passion for the A's to be in Sacramento right now. That's shocking to me because of what Kings fans do for that city and for their brand.
And even knowing that they're short timers, it's still like you would expect. I mean, because a lot of Sacramento fans, they're Giants fans, but they're also A's fans. It's right there.
Well, you should just be a fan. The team is there. And it's going to be there for a couple of years. Like, no, go out and support the damn thing.
It's so
and they actually
weird.
Spent some money this offseason. Not a lot, but some.
I'm going to be very interested to see what Major League Baseball does or doesn't do, because this is getting to the point where when you're talking about rev share and stuff like that, this is a problem
mm-hmm.
because they're not generating money.
And that may be it, is just the sour taste in Californians' mouth over John Jay Fisher, mm-hmm. his handling of the situation in Oakland, his continued missteps with the situation in Las Vegas that is not going great.
No, Vegas still doesn't want the team.
I don't, this is going to be a boiling point for Major League Baseball to see what they actually do with the A's and their ownership.
Do you think that the A's, wherever they end up,
Portland,
whether it's Portland, Utah, or Vegas, do you think Fisher is a part of it? Because I'm at the point where I think they're going to do something.
I don't think so.
I think they're going to force him out by the end of the year.
They should. It's a really slippery slope and a mm-hmm. bad precedent to set. But I think this is a unique set of circumstances with how much he has alienated fan base not just of the A's, but of baseball now, because now you're seeing it. This is alienating the baseball fan base. Yes. You can go to a team that does not have a major league team, wants a major league team, and they're still not going to your games. This should be a slam dunk, no brainer. Yeah. Prices should be through the roof to get into an A's game in Sacramento.
Because it's limited.
And it's, people just aren't showing up.
And you've got
one. It is undeniable, which means it can't be denied.
Exactly. That's right, Billy.
And the thing about it is crazy, is, as you mentioned, it's the Cubs. You have one of the most storied franchises in baseball in your opening series, and you're not even getting people to show up for that?
Wild.
That's crazy to me.
That is wild.
I can't, like, you go up to a Mariners game during the season when the Cubs, the Yankees, the Cardinals, you know, the big east of the Mississippi clubs come through.
You want to watch the Blue Jays when they come into town because all of Canada comes down.
And even like, and Seattle's a good team that has fans, and you will still see just swaths of visiting fans. If you can't even do that at a 15,000 seat park, that is nuts to me.
Yeah. I'd pump the brakes on Mariners being a good team.
Well, I mean, it's you know what I mean. As far as
I know,
like,
exactly what you mean. Like, I know exactly.
There's fans there.
Their
man.
Fans care.
Yeah,
their fans care. All right, we've got layers to the onion of DK Metcalf next on The Fan. Is this the fall of dust underneath my feet? How weird would it have been to see Val Kilmer in Backdraft?
Not one bit.
Yeah,
I could see him right. Was it Kurt Russell's character?
No.
Okay.
He would have starred alongside Kurt Russell. Billy Baldwin is who took that role. And
Val would have been better in that role.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. Him, and that's a lot of jawline in a movie, man.
Do you want to know do you know who else turned that role down in Backdraft that starred alongside Kurt Russell? Val Kilmer. Tom Cruise, Matt Dillon, Johnny Depp, Dennis Quaid. All five of them turned down that role in Backdraft.
Depp, I wouldn't have liked. Quaid could have been good.
Yeah, Dennis Quaid would have been great in it.
But Val would have been awesome in that role.
I was going to say Johnny Depp, he would have been still too young. And
yeah.
Pretty.
But he could have played the young, dumb firefighter
a little
bit. But
I guess they wind up with Billy
Baldwin.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Role would have changed a little bit, but it would have been good.
But Val in that role, him and Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
That would. Do you remember how big of a deal Backdraft was as far as like the lead up to that? I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Do you remember being a kid going to like fast food restaurants and getting posters? Like giveaway, like movie posters?
Yeah.
Like that was like the movie propaganda?
Yeah.
And
that
I was.
That was cool. The smaller ones.
I remember getting one for, I think it was Taco Bell, did Demolition Man.
Yeah, well, it's because that was the fine dining, was Taco Bell.
And then there was another fast food restaurant that did Tank Girl. Do you remember that giant flop?
No.
You know, good old Lori Petty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. She had done something just before that did really well.
Was it Point Break?
You know what? It might have been Point Break.
FBI agent.
But yeah, Tank Girl bombed so hard. But I remember as a kid, because you're like, oh, I got a movie poster. You put it up in your room.
Yeah.
I remember having the Backdraft one.
Sweet. Sweet.
We're going to get derailed by Val Kilmer every segment.
That's fair. DK Metcalf, according to Brady Henderson of ESPN, DK Metcalf, prior to his trade to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which he went public and everybody knew he wanted to be traded, Brady Henderson is now reporting that there were multiple seasons since 2019 that DK Metcalf requested a trade from the Seahawks, and they were able to kind of keep it under wraps, but it got to the point where they finally felt that this year was the year they had to move DK Metcalf. And that's an interesting turn here in the story of DK Metcalf, because obviously receivers get labeled as the divas. If they want out, they're going to make it known. DK, by this account, and Henderson doesn't explicitly say it, but by this account, DK good soldiered it and was like, all right, you know, he felt that as time kept going on, there were less and less of the guys that he was around that made them wildly successful when he first got there. And he wanted a change and he wanted out. and they finally relented and said, all right, we're going to do it. And by this time, what made it more difficult for Seattle was his contract situation. Mm-hmm. And they needed a team that could take on that DK money and say, all right, we'll give you a new deal that's going to be a lot of money.
And while also giving up assets.
And get something in return for him. And when I read that, I was like, that's kind of surprising to hear mm-hmm. from DK, right?
Yeah.
Not the trade requests over multiple seasons, but the fact that this was the breaking point. It was finally when Geno Smith is gone too, that you're like, bye, we're out, we're done, we want to go.
Yeah. No, it is interesting because we do kind of, you know, belabor the diva wide receiver, and by the reporting, he did what a lot of wide receivers don't do, and he just kind of buttoned it up and put his head down and plowed through.
We'll make it through. We're going to do the damn thing. And now you have him.
Dare I say he was professional?
Yes, he was. And now you have DK Metcalf catching passes from Aaron Rodgers down at UCLA in one-on-one workouts.
Just a sheer coincidence.
Yeah, I bet they were just kind of in the same area and was like, hey, you know, you're not doing anything. Let's go down and throw, huh?
Let's go ahead and get our timing down.
Yeah. Not for the Pro Bowl, obviously.
Yeah. Definitely not as a quarterback for the Steelers.
Nah. No. Aaron Rodgers needs to make that damn decision.
Just get it over with, dude. We know where it's happening. There's nowhere else you're going to go.
Do you think there's an element of, and I could see this happening. It's April 2nd today.
Mm-hmm.
Draft is at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Aaron Rodgers dragging this thing out and not making a decision until after the draft. And seeing how the Steelers draft and go, dude, you drafted my replacement and I've got to be mentor again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a great move
from
Aaron Rodgers because you're not the long-term answer.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being a part of his play right now.
Or how invested are you? Like, what if it's not quarterback, what do you go get?
Yeah. Dude, you don't need any more targets. You got George Pickens. Mm-hmm. You have
DK
Metcalf. You have Pat Freiermuth. Mm-hmm. It's probably protection.
Yeah.
Protection.
They've got a decent O-line.
Yeah, but he's always going to want to be better. Get something for him that benefits mm-hmm. him. Maybe go and get a running back based on who's available mm-hmm. at that point. Aaron Rodgers is such an interesting guy because his talent has been undeniable throughout his entire career, but it has been a weird case where we can see a guy's ego grow in real time.
Yeah, because it wasn't that.
No, he was the underdog story. He was the guy that had to, you know, go to Butte College and didn't have Division I offers. Damn near went to Lewis and Clark College mm-hmm. here in Portland, D3, and then said, no, I'm going to bet on myself. Goes to Butte, then goes to Cal and Stars, and then goes in the green room, and we have that awkward footage of him just
sitting,
falling down the draft boards, you know, and sitting there for hours and hours and hours before his name finally gets called. And that he
and
was this,
sitting behind Favre for years.
He was the underdog
yeah.
who, all right, he gets his chance and everybody's like, oh my God, this guy's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point on, it went from he was an underdog to insufferable.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now. It's a crazy thing to see because we also saw that with Tom Brady, right? Sixth round pick, and then he becomes a superstar. But the thing about Brady is that he always, public facing, kept his ego in check, right? Yeah. And always public facing, it was always, I'm going to do what's best for the team. We've come to find out that obviously, behind the scenes, there was angling with the ownership in Robert Kraft. There was angling with Bill Belichick and blow-up fights over, you know, roles and you need to stop coming at me now because I've established myself. But it was always the public-facing. He kept that kind of pushed behind.
The game is the game.
With Rodgers, it was like, we've seen everything come out about his ego and he's made everything public.
Yeah. Which, sometimes it's better to not.
Sometimes
it's better just to not on everything. Well, speaking of going from being professional to not, worst day on the web, it's going to be sports related. Why? Because Ja Morant did something very stupid last night, and we'll get to that next. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Man, that sucks.
Today's worst day on the web. Let's go back here a little bit in the not so far back time machine. You remember when John Morant decided at Shotgun Willie's to spray money everywhere and brandish firearms?
Yeah.
And then do it again?
Yeah, do you also remember like the reports of flashing a gun at a high school kid and somebody in his entourage taking a gun
a
to
laser a pointer
volleyball game? Oh, laser pointer on the loading
outside
dock.
Outside of the car, which everybody knows was a red dot attached to a firearm.
Then there was the shoe store employee as part of that,
yes,
where
entourage showed up and basically threatened to beat the hell out of him.
There's been a lot of gun-related things surrounding John Morant.
So, that led to multiple suspensions.
Yeah.
And him basically being blacklisted by the NBA came this close to losing his deal with Nike. Still surprised they kept him.
But for those listening on the radio, Danny had his fingers very close together. Right there.
So last night in the game, this complete dummy
against the Golden State Warriors,
this complete dummy did a finger gun celebration up and down, pointing it at all the Warriors bench.
Now that's the big one right there.
What? Look, I don't care about the celebration for 99.999999% of all athletes. And I know it was like, oh, we need to get this out. I don't care. Ja, you can't even imitate a gun. You can't go anywhere near. You can't even draw a cartoon gun.
Yeah, that's not in his best interest to do. What? And so now the league is investigating.
Yes, because
John
they're
Morant
going,
for this.
Hey, dummy, there's one thing you specifically cannot do.
Yeah, it's it's like he is on probation and he's violating his probation. There's no, it is no secret to John Morant either. He's been talked to several face-to-face meetings with Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA. His organization
has... He had a 25-game suspension after the brandishing the gun on IG after the Shotgun Willie's incident.
Now, this is just a guy with zero awareness. Like, look, 2K has got to slide that awareness thing down to zero.
Yeah, yes. And this is obviously on the heels of Taylor Jenkins getting fired, and all of a sudden, Jaws hamstrings better. Weird how that worked. But all of this stuff, it's like, to kind of boil it down, most of the Taylor Jenkins firing, the relationship between Taylor and Jaw, it's gone.
Yeah.
And basically, he was able to steamroll, but they had built the offense to where it was jaw-proof. Because he misses so much time, and they had to do something. And Ja felt a certain way about that. And you're getting reports out there from other rivaling Western Conference executives about Ja Morant being available for a trade if this wasn't done, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's some subterfuge there. But, like, I've heard those whispers.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Now Ja's back, and he's got a new head coach that he can walk all over. And he's feeling his oats. And he's just out there acting a fool immediately.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that took to social media to defend Ja Morant on this one, saying, oh, now finger gun celebration's not a problem until Ja starts doing it. And it shows, like, you know, LeBron up in the air doing the guns.
Is it puts him in the
there's,
holster.
There's one of Dyson Daniels where he hit a three against the Pelicans and he turned and he just did, like, the spray, like, tch.
Yeah.
And then there's a few others of guys that are holding up the finger guns in celebrations, right, when they knock down a three. Here's the biggest difference. Outside of the Ja Morant being very gunny and getting in trouble and suspended 25 games for it, is that his was directed at the Golden State Warriors bench. The Dyson Daniels one was to his own bench. The LeBron James one, to the air, right? Most of these gun celebrations is like, pew, pew, you know, to a teammate or your own teammates because it's a bench celebration. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm outraged over a finger gun celebration.
I don't care about it. The only reason I even care is because it's John. And there's a specific reason for it.
But this is why it's the worst day on the web, is because he cannot get out of his own way and have any awareness that this is not a good idea for him to do. in that you are under the microscope.
It'd be like Charles Barkley if he did a breaking the glass celebration after throwing a guy through a window.
Yes, it would be. It's one of the signs, and this is why the NBA is looking into it, is because they want to see signs that he is maturing and that he is growing. And seemingly at every turn, we have not seen that yet. Now, you mentioned this with a guy like Trae Young. He is now in his seventh year in the NBA, and the signs of maturity are starting to manifest, right? Where he is being a better teammate. He is, you know, being more coachable and acquiescing to what his coaches and teammates need him to be in order to be a better team. It may take a lot of time for Ja, but he's going to lose a lot of money out of his pocketbook, whether it's through endorsements or through the NBA continually taking money until it does register with him. And that's one of the things, is he is the epitome of the guy who surrounds himself with yes men,
mm-hmm,
and is not understanding the gravity of situations or what it's like to have a microscope and you being under it for all of the wrong reasons.
Look,
because he's
7
like,
years from now, you're clean and you're clear and you don't have this stuff in the, like, directly in your rear view.
Yep.
You can do it.
Yeah. I mean,
you shouldn't, but like, it's just, again, it's not the most egregious thing. And all these job, oh God, player stands drive me crazy. It's like, oh, it's because it's job. Yes. Yes. You're getting it.
You're getting it now.
Congratulations. You've passed the literacy test.
It's obviously happening.
It's like, yes, it's because of Jaws past directly. There is a 1-to-1 line. There is a correlation.
Yeah.
Guy acted stupid with guns. Don't do stupid imitations with guns.
You know what was also great about this? If you watch the video of it, Ja does it towards the Warriors bench, and Draymond Green is walking up, and
he's going like, "What are you doing?"
Even Draymond Green's like, "What?" And he's like, "Is this really happening?" And he walks up to the official, like, "Did you just see that?"
And I don't think it was because of the celebration. It was because Ja was doing something with guns. And even he's like, "Brother, I'm dumb, but good God."
Steph had issue with it too. Steph was like, "This guy root for real right now?"
Oh, I mean, Steph had issue with it. My God. Did you see what Steph did last night?
Yeah, Steph went crazy, man.
Holy.
Yep.
There have been some performances, and which we'll talk about in Fact of Fluke here in a little bit. But yeah, Ja. God, I've wanted him to be the guy since that draft. I just don't think he's ever going to do it.
No, he's not. You want a Val Kilmer fact for this segment?
Yeah.
It is my favorite television show of all time.
Mm.
Psych.
Okay.
Yep. They made several references to Val Kilmer throughout it as like they love Val Kilmer. In the series finale, Val Kilmer made a cameo.
Oh, no kidding.
As a guy who was like this mysterious Detective Dobson that they'd always talk about Detective Dobson throughout the show, but he was never on camera for anything. Val Kilmer in the series finale cameoed as Detective Dobson.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They finally talked him into it. He's like, they were leaning on him, trying to get him. He's like, "No, I'm not going to go on the USA Network television show. My career is not at that point yet, guys." But he did him a solid, went in on the series finale.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool one.
Val Kilmer.
We just have to get to this. We're going to have story time with Scott Van Pelt because it is... it is an all-timer. We're going to get to that next year on Danny and Dusty Today, the Fan. Look, we just had to find a way to work story time with Scott Van Pelt into the show today because it is an all-timer story. SVP sat down with the boys on New Heights with the Kelce brothers and just laid out an incredible scene for anyone who's ever worked in media but took it 18 steps further.
You tweeted this at the New Heights account. Please elaborate. How close did you or Mark Schlereth come to shitting your pants on air?
Okay. So
The fact that he's like, okay, right, let's get into this.
Okay, and we're here.
Stink. Yeah, Stink.
So there was a day where I was having a rough day. Had a little gurgle in the belly. Said to Stink, there's a decent chance that while we're sitting out here, I might my pants.
Been there.
And Stink says to me, oh, it's fine. It's fine. You just need to put some leaves in the gutter. I'm like, excuse me? He's like, you don't know leaves in the gutter? I'm like, what's leaves in the gutter? He's like, you just take a big giant ball of toilet paper and you ball it up and you put it in your ass crack. And then while you're sitting there, you know, in your boxers, it's basically like a diaper of sorts.
You're just making a grown man's diaper.
I wasn't going to full on my pants. It was going to be just a short kind of a moment. That is this a fart? Oh, it's hot. No, that wasn't a fart. And so I had leaves in the gutter, and I'm happy to say I did not need the leaves in the gutter, but fellas, maybe ladies, when in doubt, if you need to go leaves in the gutter, there's a pro tip from Mark Schlereth to me, to you. That's and that's the story of how Scott Van Pelt almost shit his pants on TV. That's cool.
Okay, I learned this. You guys remember Robin Big?
Yeah.
Rob Dyrdek?
Yeah.
In his former security guard, rest in peace, mm-hmm. Big Black. I first learned of this as the man pawn from Big yes. Black. They did a whole bit on the episode mm-hmm. where he's like, no, this is just what you do. This is what big guys do. And Stink Schlereth, nickname kind of fills it out there.
Well, I mean, he was notorious for...
yeah, I mean, well, that is, offensive linemen are disgusting human yes. beings. And I love them dearly for it.
But they'll pee down their legs during games.
Yeah, that's like, you'd just be like, well, guess I'm not going to go to a bathroom. Go. Now they have nice little pop-up tents. Mm-hmm. They have like portable bathrooms that pop up on the sideline. And the guys will go in and take care of their business. And they don't have to go to the locker room. You don't have to do the Joe Paterno, you know,
shuffle
all the way across anymore. An offensive lineman telling SVP that is the most on-brand thing of all time.
Yes.
Because he's like... They think of Schlereth, University of Idaho, mm-hmm. to then being a multi-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman, Super Bowl winning O lineman. Like that guy's been through it. If you are going to confide in somebody,
that's a guy to
that this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. He's the guy because yeah. he'll have answers for you, mm-hmm. and he did. He had answers. Now
leaves in the gutter. That's a great name.
The leaves in the gutter. So this just tells me, and SVP did not elaborate on it, that there was a moment where in a commercial break, he ran
mm-hmm.
and he was like, this may be it. And was like, well, it's not now, but we got to put the leaves in the gutter at this point.
Look, I have never gone leaves in the gutter.
Nor have I.
But there, you know, the YouTube audience has maybe caught this once or twice. I have looked at you as we've gone to a commercial break when my yeah. stomach was not good. And as we go, I kick my mic off and go, you might have to carry this next one.
Yeah. And
you, it is. We are relatively close to the bathroom, but boy, was it. There's been a photo finish.
There is nothing more terrifying than that little, the little clinch scuttle that you have to do to a bathroom.
The gurgle. And you're looking at the clock going, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I'll never forget. It was like heading into seventh grade. I went to the Drew Bledsoe, Brian Habib football camp at Western Oregon University. And, you know, we were in the dorms there. And I had one of those farts that I was like, oh, don't trust it.
Mm.
And I had to scuttle. And now, to this day, I'm man enough to admit it didn't happen. But it was close.
Oh, yeah.
It was close.
It was warm.
Yeah, rest of that camp, I was the dude who crapped his pants, though. Yeah. You know, like, them's the breaks. Sometimes you just got to lean into that, yeah. and that's who I was. Now, I stood to this day, I do contend, it never happened.
It was
dangerously close,
It didn't
though.
Exit.
It did not. But it was dangerously close, and I had to do that little clinch walk.
Yeah, there are a few things worse than thinking you're squeezing one out, and all of a sudden you get the oopsie poops.
Yeah.
Golly.
Look, and when you're not feeling good,
mm-mm.
that's... When you see the broadcaster up there and looks a little, let's go to the coaches' meetings the other day when they were doing their, and they're sweating bullets because they probably had a good night the night before and their stomachs aren't feeling real great.
Yeah.
You'll see that occasionally. It's what makes what Mel Kiper does during draft day insane.
Yeah.
Has never taken a bathroom break during a draft.
Yes, he was just like sitting there with a colostomy bag or something. I mean, what's going on?
Bro.
The man eats pumpkin pie every morning for breakfast. Right. I have a feeling it's just a rock down there. Like his lower intestines are just, there's no way that for 45 years you can eat a piece of pumpkin pie for your breakfast every morning with whipped cream. And you don't have the intestines of a petrified tree.
You just pick him up and shake him, and he sounds like a piggy bank.
Uh-huh. That's it.
Some real John Wayne stuff.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It is. All right. I got a Val Kilmer fact for you, right? There is one role that he regrets not taking.
Mm.
He was approached by the producers and directors of Crimson Tide.
Ooh.
Yes.
Hackman role?
To be Lieutenant Commander Ron Hunter.
Ooh.
Denzel's
role.
In Crimson Tide.
I can't take Denzel out of that.
But he turned that role down. Denzel took it. Do you know why he turned it down? 1995, Crimson Tide came out.
Is that Tombstone?
Ooh, I know. I'm Batman.
Oh,
he turned it
yeah.
down. To be Batman, which was a colossal flop for
yeah.
him.
Well, at least he didn't have the Clooney nipples.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. So I hope everybody's enjoying their lunch after this segment.
I always forget about the Val Kilmer Batman.
Yeah, right? It's forgettable.
It's was not good.
It's forgettable.
He's got, the jaw, the facial structure for Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
You know what he said was the biggest issue?
Mm.
We've talked about Kilmer method.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said that he could not get into any sort of character because the costume was so restrictive, he couldn't move. And so he tried to act.
It's not the Marvel costumes of today where...
No, it was too stiff and rigid. So it just became a situation where it was, you have to just basically stand there and just say your lines.
That's right, because I remember, now you're unlocking something. He had the head and cowl piece, it was all one. Mm-hmm. He couldn't turn his neck.
Yeah, he was just like
they actually make
a
reference to that in the Bale Batman about, what, you want to be able to turn your head?
Yeah.
That's what that's in reference to, is because that Val Kilmer character could not turn his head because it was one solid piece that went all the way down into the breastplate.
And Clooney Batman, he was in line to play that Batman, but he'd already committed to making The Saint. So instead of doing the Clooney Batman and Robin, where he was going to redeem himself with nipples, according to Rust, it would have conflicted with The Saint. So he ended up not being Batman anymore. All right.
I mean, it happens.
Yep.
You can't say I'm Batman anymore.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, that's how it is.
You're always Batman. Yeah, once a Batman, always a Batman.
Maybe in Val's case, he didn't want to be.
Yeah. Probably.
It happens. All right, coming up in hour number three, the NIL world, the basketball coaches have spoken, and it's something Dusty and I hit on, and now they're saying it loud and proud. We'll get to that in hour number three on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.